The Occult Tesla Part 2, Tesla's Eugenics and Other Black Magic. In an interview with George Sylvester Viereck in 1937, Tesla was asked how he envisioned the world by the year 2100. While the great genius described many wondrous technologies that would ease the life of future citizens, he also shared some of his views on purifying the human gene pool under a governing scientific priesthood of eugenics. Describing his future utopia, Tesla said, "Eugenics is universally established. In past ages, the law governing the survival of the fittest roughly weeded out the less desirable strains. Then, man's new sense of pity began to interfere with the ruthless workings of nature. As a result, we continue to keep it alive and breed the unfit. The only method compatible with our notion of civilization and the race is to prevent the breeding of the unfit by the sterilization and the deliberate guidance of the mating instinct." Several European countries and a number of states of the American Union sterilize the criminal and the insane. This is not sufficient. The trend of opinion among ecumenicists is that we must make marriage more difficult. Certainly, no one who is not a desirable parent should be permitted to produce progeny. A century from now, it will no more occur to a normal person to mate with a person eugenically unfit than to marry a habitual criminal. From A Machine to End War, as told to George Sylvester Viereck, 1937. You might be thinking, that was ugly. That may be so, but Tesla is a great man who loved humanity. So perhaps your non-genius mind is just incapable of understanding the complex thinking of someone so great. Considering the fact that Tesla and George Sylvester Viereck shared a lifelong intimate friendship from 1916 until Tesla's 1943 death, and considering Viereck's role as principal representative for Nazi Germany in the United States, promoter of eugenics and fascism in America, and also promoter of the myth of Tesla itself, let's take a moment to get to know a little bit more about Viereck himself. First off, it should be known that George Sylvester Viereck was the son of a leading anarchist expelled from Germany by Chancellor Otto von Bismarck and later settled in the United States as a child in 1896. Throughout his life, Viereck firmly believed himself to be a member of the elite bloodlines of Europe and asserted that he was the illegitimate son of Kaiser Wilhelm I. Whether that was true or not, Viereck became a devoted Germanophile, Aryan supremacist, occultist, and propagandist for Germany during both world wars, even serving 5 years in jail between 1942 to 1947 for his pro-Nazi activities in the United States. Viereck organized and delivered speeches at several Nazi rallies in New York's Madison Square Garden and hobnobbed with the elite of Washington, even managing to get several senators and congressmen to use their taxpayer accounts to fund and mail hundreds of pro-Nazi pamphlets to American citizens. American historian Bradley Hart described Viereck in Hitler's American Friends, the Third Reich's Supporters in the United States, saying, quote, "U.S. senators and congressmen were receptive to the anti-British invective disseminated by the German propaganda machine, which was directed by George Sylvester Viereck, who was the Nazis' most effective tool for recruiting new American friends." I would just add, in very high places. In his 1932 best-selling book, The Strangest Friendship in History, Woodrow Wilson and Colonel House, George Sylvester Viereck carried out what is possibly the first exposé of the Jewish bankers' conspiracy that created the Federal Reserve in 1913, shaping an entire movement of conspiracy research in the United States for the next 90 years, revolving around a few key axioms, namely, number one, a total neglect of the actual British imperial agencies and occultists running the American deep state, and two, a popularization of the protocols of the learned elders of Zion forgery. Such students of Viraic as Eustace Mullins, former assistant to Senator McCarthy, Ben Friedman, and even pro-Nazi revisionist David Irving have all used Viraic's text as foundation in their own explanatory models of history. In his essay, Victims, Mullins describes his friendship with Viraic and his indignation over Franklin Roosevelt's unjust persecution of this noble Nazi, writing, quote, "Another friend, George Sylvester Viraic, was marked for personal persecution by the insane cripple Franklin Delano Roosevelt because Viraic refused to turn his back on his own heritage and do the bidding of this twisted and misshapen madman." End quote. Strangely, when House on Un-American Activity investigations were launched, the one senator who began cooperating with federal authorities on Viraic's Nazi penetrations into the government, that is, Senator Ernest Lundeen of Minnesota, died in a strange plane crash on August 31, 1940, near Lovettsville, Virginia, killing all 24 passengers and two federal investigators riding with him on board his plane. Senator Lundeen's only chance to give testimony about the occult networks of Viraic in America was thus effectively snuffed out. During World War I, Viraic ran two influential pro-German newspapers out of New York named The Fatherland and The Internationalist. As editor-in-chief of both journals, Viraic worked closely with fellow occultist Aleister Crowley, who wrote for both journals and served as editor of The International, where the Beast lost no time promoting both political propaganda as well as his revealed doctrine of thelema, that is a word in Greek for will, and other occult New Age theories. According to Richard Spence's Secret Agent 666 book, Crowley was stationed by British intelligence in the USA from 1914 to 1919, where he ran anti-British propaganda, on the one hand, interfacing closely with the Eastern establishment's Sleepy Hollow Club owned by the Rockefeller family, and where he seeded other occult cells across the USA, including what became his Ordo Templi Orientis in New York and California, while also acting as honoris magus in the Societas Rosicruciana. Crowley's California lodges would later be led by Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard. As Marco Passi explains in Aleister Crowley and the Temptation of Politics, Crowley and Viraic had already met in London in 1911, before Crowley would be deployed to the USA. This places Viraic himself into the position of a likely British intelligence asset in the USA. In 1912, Crowley was made outer head of the Ordo Templi Orientis by Theodore Royce, the same Royce who had worked with Memphis Mizraim Rite founder John Yarker, Karl Kellner, anthroposophist Rudolf Steiner, and Aleister Crowley in the ancient Rite of Memphis and Mizraim. In 1913, Crowley became the head of the ancient and primitive rite of Memphis and Mizraim. According to Steiner's autobiography, the former Theosophy leader was initiated into the Memphis and Mizraim rite by John Yarker with his former wife, Mary von Sievers. Although by 1912, it is admitted that he had publicly distanced himself from Royce and Yarker, at least in the public eye. Steiner was a devoted advocate of Rosicrucianism and lectured extensively on the secret wisdom of Rosicrucians throughout the ages, which places his thinking into direct alignment with the Hermetic order of Crowley, Royce, Yarker et al. In his bizarre 1912 lecture, Esoteric Christianity and the Mission of Christian Rosenkreuz, Steiner spoke of his belief of the Martian home of the spirit being Buddha, Christ, and the founder of Rosicrucianism, the mythic Christian Rosenkreuz, whom he proposed were all avatars of this same Christ-consciousness spirit. Steiner explained in his lecture that this Christ-consciousness spirit entity lives in a spirit culture on Mars, transmitting information telepathically via the spirit ether of space to adepts on Earth. Were these the same beings on Mars that Tesla believed he received transmissions from in 1899? More on that will be discussed in a future report. As a footnote, Steiner states, "In the 15th century, the necessity had arisen on Mars for the Mars culture to receive an upward impulse. That was the significant question facing Christian Rosenkreuz and his pupils. How this upward impulse could be given to the Mars culture for the salvation of the Earth was also at stake. Rosicrucianism was faced with the mighty task of solving the problem of what had to happen so that for the Earth's sake, the Mars culture should be brought once more into an ascending path." That was Rudolf Steiner in Esoteric Christianity and the Mission of Christian Rosenkreuz. During this dense period of occult activity leading up to the First World War, Crowley made contact with the leading Ariosophists, that is a Theosophist spin-off group, led by Otto von Liszt and Lanz von Liebenfels. Dr. Franz Hartmann's New Templar Order and Armanon Order were also tied to these groups, which later merged to give rise to the Thule Society in 1919. The Thule Society was the elite SS occult religion led by Dietrich Eckart, Karl Haushofer, Rudolf Hess, Heinrich Himmler, and other adepts of the Nazi high command. Dr. Hartmann was also a member of Crowley's Argentum Astrum and also president of the Indian Theosophical Society, and in 1907, alongside Annie Besant, who became the first female member of the Theosophy-infiltrated Indian Congress Party, which later collaborated with the Nazis. On his deathbed, Thule Society founder Dietrich Eckart bragged of his initiation of Adolf Hitler into the secret doctrine, a term popularized by Madame Blavatsky in 1888, and promoted by Steiner before and after he created the Anthroposophist Society in 1912. Dietrich Eckart stated to a meeting of the Thule Gesellschaft in December 1923, "Follow Hitler, he will dance, but it is I who have called the tune. I have initiated him into the secret doctrine, opened his centers in vision, and given him the means to communicate with the powers. Do not mourn for me. I shall have influenced history more than any German." In the final chapter of Mein Kampf, Hitler wrote of his mentor Eckart, "I should like to mention the name of a man who devoted his life to reawakening his and our people through his writing and his ideas and finally through positive action. I mean Dietrich Eckart. The slaves shall serve." In case you didn't get that last bit, "the slaves shall serve," says Hitler. By the time Hitler published these words, Crowley had himself also joined Eckart's Thule Society, continuing to serve as German agent for the occult and supporter of Nazism. It was also during this period that Crowley admitted to meeting with George Sylvester Viereck in Germany in the 1920s to 30s several times in order to make Crowley's doctrine of Thelema the governing ideology of the Nazi Party. In his book, Prophet of Evil, Aleister Crowley, 9/11 and the New World Order, William Ramsey writes, "Adolf Hitler and Aleister Crowley, the great black magicians of the 20th century, shared similar ideologies. Their worldviews were influenced by the European occult movements of the late 19th and early 20th century. Informed by the ideas of Freemasonry and Theosophy, both of these significant personalities supported the doctrine of the survival of the fittest, the primacy of the human will, and the ideal of a feudal slave state. And in case you were wondering, the Thule Society still exists and has their own website and promotional videos. Richard B. Spence's research has been corroborated by declassified documents from the archives of the United States Army's Military Intelligence Division, which proved that Crowley was a British double agent the entire time. Certainly, Crowley's mastery of Kundalini yoga, Druidism, and German occult rituals positioned him favorably to win the appeal of leading figures within the anti-British resistance of India, Ireland, and Germany, all of whom were extremely active in neutral America before and during World War I. In a declassified report from the chief intelligence officer at West Point to the director of military intelligence dated September 23, 1918, we read the following report on Crowley's connection with Viereck. Aleister Crowley, English subject. Previous correspondence. Subject has been camping on Aesopus Island, Hudson River, and was brought to attention of this officer by subject's connections with Madeline George, an actress of New York City who had formerly been investigated by the Department of Justice on charges of being a German spy. It was determined that Aleister Crowley was an employee of the British government, but at present in this country on official business, of which the British Council, New York City, has full cognizance. However, he has been formally investigated by the Attorney General Becker's office in connection with activity of George Viereck and the propaganda in New York City. It was found that the British government was fully aware of the fact that Crowley was connected with this German propaganda and had received money for writing anti-British articles. This case has been turned over to the New York State Attorney General's office for such action as he may deem advisable. Another interesting report from the U.S. Office of Naval Intelligence, then overseen by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, dated July 10, 1917, zeroed in on Theodore Royce, Crowley's fellow leader at the Rosicrucian Ordo Templi Orientis, which stated that Crowley, quote, maintains some mysterious means of communication with their chief in Berlin, Rudolf Steiner, end quote. Is it possible that Tesla's 186-foot Wardenclyffe Tower, financed by J.P. Morgan, was the mysterious means referred to by U.S. naval intelligence in 1917 to communicate messages wirelessly across the Atlantic? Certainly, Crowley's magical workings on Long Island during that period situate him very close to Tesla's tower, and Crowley's association with Tesla's intimate friend Viereck caused the mind to wonder. Rudolf Steiner's possible role as coordinator of the occult intelligence network in the USA is additionally fascinating, since he also played the role of personal spiritual guru to the German chief of staff Helmut von Moltke. While it is impossible to know what advice Steiner gave to General Moltke, what is known is that the general walked into every single trap set for Germany by British strategists. By July 1917, the Navy, under the leadership of Franklin Roosevelt, had enough and ordered the demolition of Wardenclyffe Tower due to the naval intelligence reports that, quote, German spies were using the big wireless tower to communicate with German intelligence.